various music and vid stations. Along the opposite side was a waist-high counter, with a gleaming SE-5 service droid waiting behind it.
"Good day, fine sir,"
the droid said brightly as Luke stepped into the room.
"May I be of assistance?"
"You got any Tomo Spice Karkin Rabines?" Luke asked, glancing around. There were no exits that he could see that might lead from this room into the rest of the complex. Not surprising, really, considering the sort of visitors the snack area catered to.
"Yes, fine, sir. I most certainly do,"
the droid assured him, shuffling over a few steps and producing a package from beneath the counter.
"It will take only a few moments to prepare them,"
Luke grunted.
Fine.
It took just under 4 minutes, in fact, for the droid to heat the slab of rabines and arrange them artistically on a plate. Luke spent the time wandering around the room, ostensibly looking at the vid stations, actually hunting for hidden spy cams. He'd spotted 3 of them by the time his meal was ready. Even in a completely isolated room, the Kavrloo pirates weren't taking any chances.
"May I provide you something to drink?"
the droid asked as he presented Luke with the plate.
"Don't bother," Luke said. "I've got better stuff on my ship."
"Ah, will you need a set of utensils?"
Luke gave him a scornful look.
"With spiced rabines? You must be kidding."
"Oh,"
the droid murmured, looking a little nonplussed.
"Well, do enjoy, fine sir."
Luke turned away, suppressing the out-of-character reflex to thank the droid. Tearing one of the rabines off the end of the slab, he munched on it as he headed back out into the landing bay. The pirates hadn't been idle in his absence. They'd gotten the Y-60's wide cargo ramp lowered and were beginning to bring the big transport boxes out on repulsor lift floater carts.
"I hope you're watching the corners with those things," Luke warned one of them, jabbing toward the floater cart with his rabine. "I don't want my restraint rings getting all chewed up."
"Tuck your teeth in,"
the other growled, flipping his head to toss a short braid back over one shoulder.
"Nothing's gonna get chewed up, except maybe your skin if you give us any static."
"Yeah? You and who else?"
Luke fired back, heading past him up the ramp.
"You don't mind if I check for myself?"
"Just don't get in the way."
There were 2 other pirates in the cargo hold, one just settling his box into place on his floater cart, the other already starting for the ramp with his load. Luke crossed to the side bulkhead, stretching out with the force as he pretended to examine the restraint rings for damage. In the near distance, somewhere down one of the asteroid's corridors, he could sense 2 more of the pirates returning for their next load. He estimated the timing.
Yes, he should just be able to make it.
The last of the 2 pirates was almost to the ramp now. Grunting with apparent satisfaction as to the safety of his equipment, Luke changed direction, crossing the hold toward the access door leading into the freighter's living section. The pirate maneuvered his cart down the ramp and turned around the side of the ship. And for perhaps the next 10 seconds, Luke was alone. There was no time to waste, but he and R2 had had plenty of time to practice on the flight here, and had gotten the drill down to a science. Whistling softly, Luke stepped to the box the 2 of them had prepared, at the same time getting a force grip on his rabine plate and sending it flying smoothly across the hold. R2 had heard the whistled signal, opening the access door as the meal neared it. Luke took another moment to ease the plate as far into the living section as he could see, then set it down on the deck and pulled open the side panel on the box beside him. Inside, well packaged against random bumps, was Wesselman's fancy SB-20 security breach droid. It wasn't going to do the pirates any good now, not with most of its insides cut away. But the shell that was left would make an ideal hiding place for a quiet infiltration of their base. Curling himself up, Luke squeezed into the narrow space and pulled the box's side panel closed again. Just in time. Beneath him, the deck vibrated slightly as the returning pirates climbed up the ramp. Luke stretched out with the force,
sensing as he did so their sudden suspicion. He ran through his sensory enhancement techniques.
"Control, this is Grinner,"
a murmured voice came to Luke's ears, as clear as if the pirate had been standing right beside him.
"You see our smuggler anywhere?"
"Last I saw, he was headed into the hold."
The faint voice of the pirate Luke had talked to earlier came in response.
"Said he was worried about his restraint rings."
"Yeah, he was there when we left,"
another voice agreed.
"Fine," Grinner said. "So where is he now?"
"Probably inside,"
the second voice said.
"He was headed that direction when Fulks and I were leaving, chomping down on a plate of ripe beans."
"Probably looking for something to wash down the Tomo spice with,"
a new voice added.
"He told the service droid he had some good drinking stuff aboard."
"Maybe," Grinner grunted, the word almost covered over by the soft hiss of metal on steel hide as he drew his blaster.
"Or maybe he's trying something cute, like hiding in one of these boxes. You want to get a scanner crew down here, Control?"
"Steady, Grinner,"
the unfamiliar voice advised him.
"Let me run a check first."
For a long moment, the hold was silent, keeping his force hold on the side of the box. Luke unsealed the flap of his tunic and got a grip on his lightsaber. If they didn't buy this, he would have to take them out.
"You can all decompress,"
Control's voice said.
"He's gone inside, all right. The plate he took out of the snack room is about 5 meters inside the door in front of you. There's no way he could have stashed it in there and gotten back out to the hold in the... in the 9 seconds he was out of sight."
There was a faint snort, and the sound of Grinner's blaster being holstered again.
"Yeah, okay," he said. "There's just something about this guy I don't like."
Luke took his hand off his lightsaber, letting his breath out slowly in a silent sigh of relief. His original idea, back when he'd first borrowed this ship, had been to simply take whatever food he'd scrounged into the box with him. But that plan had felt wrong somehow, and he and R2 had worked out this variation instead. He was very glad now that they had.
"So get him unloaded and out of here,"
Control said.
"She and he saw in that SB-20 droid he said he brought. I want that one next."
No. Only droid box I see is an R2 unit."
"That's the one. A SB-20 is an R2 shell with espionage gear and programming tucked away inside."
Luke's box lurched as the pirate got his float cart underneath it.
"Never heard of it."
"They're not exactly advertised at droid depots,"
Control said acidly.
"The captain's been after Wesselman for one for years."
Grinner grunted.
"And this one just happens to show up here today, huh? Convenient."
"Give it a rest, Grinner,"
the other pirate in the hold said.
"Okay, I've got the droid. Where do you want it?"
"Electronics shop,"
Control told him.
"The captain wants Pap and Casey to check it out."
"Right."
A moment later, they were off, angling down the ramp and across the landing bay floor. Luke braced himself against the droid shell, listening to the sounds around him and trying to ignore the violent shaking that was really only the small bumps and vibrations of the float cart. He had assumed he would be taken to whatever storage place the rest of the cargo was bound for, which would presumably have given him a certain amount of privacy for his exit from the box. On the other hand, the electronics shop was probably closer to the command areas of the base, which was his ultimate goal. All in all, a fair trade-off. It passed through one of the pressure doors, and for a few minutes, the only sounds were the hum of the float cart's repulsor lifts and the pirate's footsteps and raspy breathing. Then, gradually, more sounds began to filter in. Other voices and footsteps, mostly distant, but occasionally passing close by. Luke stretched out with the force, sensing a variety of human and alien minds in the vicinity. There was an odd change of echo as they apparently left the corridor and entered a larger room. Another change, this time in reverse. marked where they left the room and passed into a corridor again. The float cart turned around a corner, then another, entered another open space filled with the dull rumble of muted voices.
Lanius,
Control's voice said.
Yeah, you got me,
the pirate pushing Luke's float cart said.
Change your plans. Pav's got something torn apart in the shop and doesn't have room for your droid. Go park it in the level 4 storeroom.
Yeah, okay.
The float cart slowed and changed direction.
Too much to ask for them to make up their minds?
Very funny,
Control growled.
Just hustle it, okay?
I'm hustling,
Lanius grumped under his breath. The cart moved on, but even as it again changed corridors, Luke began to feel an odd sensation tingling at the back of his mind. Somewhere, somehow, something had suddenly gone wrong. He stretched out with the Force again, trying to track down the sensation. Ahead, a door hissed open, and the cart again entered a large room. It seemed to be taking a long time to get across it. And then, abruptly, the cart stopped.
What the...
the pirate spat.
Get out of the way, Lanius!
The voice of Control boomed over a loudspeaker.
You got yourself a rider.
The pirate bit out a curse, and there was a scramble of feet as he darted away from the lift cart.
All right, whoever you are, we know you're in there. We got a clear scan from the security corridor. Come on out!
Luke grimaced. So that's what that tingling sensation had been. A premonition of the mess he was now in. A pity he hadn't paid more attention to it, though offhand he couldn't see what he could have done to change anything at that point. And anyway, berating himself for errors in judgment would gain him nothing. Pulling out his comlink, he thumbed it on.
R2?
He said softly. There was no answer, just a quiet burst of static.
Oh, and we've also jammed your transmissions. I'm afraid the only one you're going to be able to talk to is me.
So Luke was on his own. Tucking his lightsaber a little deeper into its hiding place, he sealed the tunic flap loosely across it.
Okay, he shouted. Hold your fire! I'm coming out!
He released his Force grip on the side panel and let it swing open. Three pirates were visible, standing well back from the box, their blasters steady on him. Five others, he could sense, were spread out around the box outside his field of view. Five others, plus a Defel, skulking somewhere in the shadows as backup. Once again, they weren't taking any chances.
Well, well,
Control's voice said, as Luke eased his way out of the disemboweled droid and stood up.
Took a wrong turn, did you, Menzio?
No, I think it was Lanius who took the wrong turn, Luke said, keeping his hands away from his blaster as he looked around.
They were in a large, high-ceilinged room, with stacked boxes lining two of the walls. His box had been set down in an otherwise unoccupied corner, away from the rest of the merchandise. The eight pirates were arrayed in a rough semicircle around him. He didn't spot the Defel, but it was probably somewhere between him and the only door, across the room behind the ring of blasters.
I came to see your captain, not your inventory.
One of the pirates facing Luke growled something unintelligible.
I think you ought to know that Hensing there really despises sarcastic jinx,
Control said.
Really?
Luke said, sending another casual glance toward the door area. The glow panel switch was just to the side of the panel, a simple push plate that he could trigger with the Force. Perfect.
Sorry to hear that.
You could get a lot sorrier. He has a theory that jinx get less sarcastic when they've had a hand or two blown off.
Luke smiled grimly, flexing the fingers of his artificial right hand.
He's right about that. Take my word for it.
Just so we understand each other. Take out your blaster. I'm sure you know the routine.
Sure,
Luke said, pulling out his blaster with exaggerated care and lowering it to the floor in front of him.
You want the spare power packs, too?
He asked, pointing to the two small flat boxes riding the other side of his gun belt.
No. You're welcome to hide behind them if you like. Just kick the blaster away from you.
Luke complied, using the force to make sure the weapon skidded to a halt precisely at Hensing's feet. Happy?
Happier than you're gonna be. I don't think you realize how much trouble you're in here, Menzio.
It was time, Luke decided, to switch tacks.
Fine. No more nonsense, he said, putting an edge into both his voice and his posture. I'm here to talk to your captain about making a deal.
If Control was impressed by the new Menzio, his voice didn't show it.
Sure you are. What? You couldn't call for an appointment?
I wanted to check out your security, Luke told him. See if you're the sort of people my employer would be interested in doing business with.
And what would this business consist of?
I was instructed to discuss it with your captain, Luke said loftily. Not underlings.
Hensing growled again, lifting his blaster.
Then your employer is either stupid or a fool, or both. You have 5 seconds to give me something solid. After that, I turn Hensing loose on you.
If you insist, Luke said, crossing his arms across his chest and looking across the room at the glow panel switch.
That warning tingle had returned.
We understand that you're using clones to crew some of your ships. We want to discuss hiring some of them from you.
Control tisked.
Sorry. Wrong answer. Take him.
The pirates lifted their blasters, and reaching out through the force, Luke flipped off the glow panels. There was a snarled curse, almost drowned out by the sputtering of multiple blaster bolts cutting through the air where Luke had been standing. But Luke was no longer there. A force-strengthened leap had sent him sailing over their heads toward the door, lightsaber ready in his hand. If they'd been overconfident enough not to leave a guard outside the door, there was a flicker of premonition, and he had the lightsaber in guard position just as he spotted the Defel's pale red eyes gazing down at him from the top of one of the stacks of boxes. He sensed rather than saw the weapon tracking toward him, igniting the lightsaber just as the blaster's flash sparked from between the red eyes. The green blade blazed into existence, startlingly bright in the darkness, deflecting the Defel's blaster bolt harmlessly away. But even as he hit the floor beside the door, Luke realized that Defel had won this round. His shot had missed, but he had forced Luke to reveal both his location and his true identity. The other pirates weren't slow in picking up on either. Someone across the room swore,
"It's Skywalker!"
Another shouted, and suddenly, a fresh volley of blaster fire was raining through the air toward him. Luke backed to the door, letting the force guide his defense. The door had probably been sealed. Jumping sideways toward it to temporarily throw off his opponent's aim, he slashed twice with his lightsaber. A flat dive out the opening, and he was free. The corridor outside was deserted. Rolling back to his feet, lightsaber at the ready, he stretched out with the force, seeking the ambush that must surely be lurking nearby. But there were no other presences that he could detect.
Giving up already? He called.
Hardly.
Control's voice came from a speaker set into the ceiling a few meters away.
Rather foolish of you to give away your identity so quickly.
I prefer to think of it as an overabundance of confidence, Luke countered,
stretching out a little harder. Still, nothing. And if he'd really caught them off guard, it wouldn't be smart to give them time to regroup. Picking what he hoped was the direction he'd come from, he set off at a fast trot.
You ready to tell me where you're getting your clones from? He added toward the speaker. I'd really rather not have to hunt down your captain and ask him personally.
Hunt all you like,
Control said, his voice now coming from a different speaker farther down the corridor. Clearly, they were tracking Luke's movements.
You won't find anyone here who knows. But thank you for confirming that was what you came here to learn.
You're welcome, Luke said, clenching his teeth as the tingle of danger again tugged at him. Ahead, the corridor curved gently to the right, and somewhere beyond the curve, he could finally sense other presences waiting for him. It was a classic bottle squeeze setup. Pin the enemy in a curve or angle where he would be trapped in a crossfire without the two ends of the crossfire shooting at each other. He could sense the pirates he'd left behind in the storeroom piling out into the corridor now. A few more heartbeats, and there would be blaster fire coming at his back. But the pirates' contingency plans were unlikely to have included the possibility of a Jedi running loose in their base. Just this side of the curve, a heavy blast door revealed the presence of a side corridor leading out of the trap to the left. The blaster he'd left back in the storeroom wouldn't have made a dent in it, but he had a far more efficient way of opening doors than the pirates could have anticipated. Skidding to a stop in front of the blast door, he ignited his lightsaber and slashed through the lock mechanism. It began sliding ponderously open. There was a flicker of warning, and Luke spun around just in time to sweep the lightsaber blade across three incoming blaster bolts. The pirates from the storeroom, seeing their bottle squeeze about to fail, were charging full speed toward him, firing as they ran. Luke blocked two more bolts, the rest were going wide, and ducked through the still opening blast door into a wide corridor. The corridor's appearance was a surprise. Unlike the rough-hewn feel of the rest of the base, this area looked like it might have been transplanted straight from inside a capital starship. Smooth metal-lined walls formed a square cross-section about 4 meters wide, the corridor itself stretching 20 meters before ending in a T-junction with another of the more typical rocky corridors. The only light was the spillover coming from behind Luke, and the similar glow from the far end. Even so, there was enough illumination to see that all the surfaces of the corridor, walls, ceiling, and floor, were covered with a decorative pattern of 3-centimeter diameter circles, spaced about 10 centimeters apart. The corridor itself was deserted, and Luke could sense no one skulking around the corners ahead. Apparently, he had indeed caught them off guard. But his danger sense was still tingling. Something about the corridor? Still, with two groups of enemies behind him, there was nowhere to go but through. Senses alert for a trap, he headed down the corridor. He'd made it 4 steps when, without warning, gravity abruptly reversed itself, sending him falling toward the ceiling. There was no chance for physical or mental preparation. His head and shoulders slammed into the metal, sending a jolt of pain arcing through him. The rest of his body tumbling down with a dull thud and more pain. He gasped for breath. The impact had knocked most of the air out of him. But before he could get more than half a lungful, he was falling again, this time sideways toward one of the side walls. He landed hard on his right side, a fresh stab of pain lancing through head and shoulder and hip as he scrabbled around for a handhold. But there was nothing to grip on the smooth metal. Stretching out to the force, he sensed the gravitational field starting to change again. And then his new floor suddenly became the ceiling again, and he was falling toward the far wall. But not toward flat metal this time. Twisting his head around, he saw that what he'd taken to be decorative circles drawn in the wall were in fact the heads of flat-tipped metal rods. They had extruded outward from the wall now, rising like a forest of blunted spears to meet his descent. Clenching his teeth, Luke reached out to the force and threw out his hands to meet the oncoming bars. With their tight spacing, there was no chance for him to slide between them. But if he could grab two of them and slow his fall, he could at least keep from landing on them at full speed. He caught hold of the two pointed at his face and chest, reaching to the force for the strength to slow himself. He succeeded, and for a brief moment held himself balanced over them in midair. And then, he was slammed onto them anyway, as a corresponding set of bars from the wall behind him jabbed hard into his back and legs, driving him forward. He grunted as the wind was again knocked out of him, trying to twist around against the forest of bars digging into him. But even as he struggled to work his left arm through the rods pinning it, two more sets of bars slid out from the floor and ceiling, slamming into his shoulders, head, and legs, and pinning him even tighter in place. There was another flurry of gravity changes that did little except jam every part of his body in random turn against the various sets of bars. And then, gravity settled back to its original vector, leaving him suspended, more or less, upright in the room.
"Well, well,"
Control's mocking voice said into the silence.
"Surprised, are we?"
"A little," Luke conceded, fighting past the dizziness left over from the gravity changes and looking around as best he could with his head pinioned rigidly in place. The entire corridor had become a huge three-dimensional crosshatch of rods, filling the whole space between the blast doors that had slid into place at both ends, sealing him inside.
"We set this up about 5 years ago,"
Control continued.
"Your Yavin Academy was seeding the galaxy with cocky little would-be Jedi, and we figured it would be only a matter of time before one of them dropped in on us. So we figured to have a surprise ready for him. Never figured on having the Grand High Moffling himself show up. So what do you think?"
"It's inventive. I'll give you that," Luke said, testing the strength of the bars with his shoulders and arms. He might have saved himself the effort. "I hope you're not expecting it to hold me for long."
"You might be surprised. I take it you haven't noticed where your lightsaber ended up."
Luke couldn't even remember when during all those gravity switches he dropped it. Now, straining out of the corner of his eye, he spotted the weapon 15 meters away across the room, wedged just like he was within the interlocking sets of bars.
"You can see it's a tighter group of bars over at that end,"
Control pointed out.
"Holds the thing pretty solidly in place."
Luke smiled. Clearly, for all his preparation, the pirate hadn't learned enough about Jedi. Reaching out with the Force, he activated the lightsaber switch. With a snap hiss, the green blade flashed into existence. Reaching out again, Luke attempted to twist the handle sideways. Nothing happened.
"You see the genius of the design?"
Control said conversationally.
"It's held at just the right angle so that the blade sticks out in the gap between bars without touching any of them. Clever, eh?"
Luke didn't answer. The lightsaber seemed to be solidly wedged in place. But if the blade wasn't touching the bars, the handle ought to slide freely either backward or forward. Getting a force grip on it, he slid it forward.
"Oh, it'll go that direction all right,"
Control said as the lightsaber began to move.
"Unless it gets hung up by its switch or something. But that won't do you any good. The blade still won't touch any of the bars."
The tip of the blade had reached the wall now. Luke continued forcing it in that direction, pushing the blade straight into the metal plating.
"And naturally, we weren't stupid enough to put any critical equipment behind the walls for you to cut into,"
Control finished.
"A little more impressed now, are we?"
"Maybe a little," Luke said. "Now what?"
"What do you think?"
Control retorted, his voice suddenly dark.
"We know what you Jedi can do, Skywalker. Don't think we don't. I figure that from that little ride through our base alone, you've probably already dug out enough dirty silt about our operation to send everyone here to Fodderaunt or Bochin for the next 20 years. You think we're going to just sit here and let you do that to us? You're crazy."
Luke grimaced with the irony. Control was right. Using his full Jedi strength, he almost certainly could have invaded the pirates' minds that deeply. But with his new reluctance to use his power so casually, he had in fact done nothing of the sort.
So what do you want to do? Make a deal?
Hardly. We want you to die.
Really?
Luke said dryly. The bars here might be too strong for human muscle, but that was hardly the limiting factor of a Jedi. Bending enough bars out of the way for him to get to his lightsaber would be a long and tedious job, but he had more than enough depth in the Force to accomplish it.
From old age, or do you have something more immediate in mind?
I'm actually kind of sorry. Seems a waste, dusting you like this, especially after what this Jedi trap cost to build. But no one's offering bounties on captured Jedi these days. Even if they were, I don't suppose that cage would hold you long enough for us to collect. So there it is. Goodbye, Skywalker.
There was a click, and the speaker fell dead. And in the silence, Luke heard a sound that hadn't been there before. The quiet hiss of escaping gas.
He took a deep breath, stretching out to the Force.
There were Jedi poison neutralizing techniques that should be able to handle whatever they were pumping in at him. Still, he'd better not dawdle on getting out of here. Closing his eyes, reaching more deeply to the Force, he began bending one of the bars away from his face. And then, suddenly, his eyes snapped open as the truth belatedly hit him. The pirates weren't pumping poison in. They were pumping the air out. And not even a Jedi could survive for long without air. Luke took another deep breath, pushing away his rising fear.
A Jedi must act when he is calm, at peace with the Force.
All right. R2 and the X-Wing might already be in the pirates' hands. Even if they weren't, there was no way for the snub fighter to maneuver its way through the cramped and twisting corridors. He was on his own here, with no resources but the few pieces of equipment he was carrying. A comlink, glow rod, data pad, and 2 spare blaster power packs. Luke reached out with the Force, lifting the small flat boxes off his belt and floating them up to where he could see them. Back during the height of the rebellion, the mechanical genius General Aaron Kraken had found a way to rig blaster power packs to explode. All it took was 2 or more packs fastened together with their overload sturm dowels removed. And in 30 seconds, they would blow with the power of a medium-sized grenade. The blast should have enough power to shatter or twist any of the bars in its immediate vicinity. Unfortunately, it would do similar damage to Luke himself. But with a little ingenuity, it was the work of a few seconds to remove the overload dowels from the power packs. Then, holding them pressed together with the Force, he maneuvered them carefully through the maze of bars toward the far blast door. If Control was still monitoring him, and if the pirate knew about this trick, he would probably conclude that Luke was trying to punch a hole in the blast door and let in some air. He would also undoubtedly conclude that the metal was more than strong enough to withstand such an explosion. Which was fine with Luke. The longer the pirates operated under false assumptions, the slower they would react when they finally figured out what he really had in mind. His makeshift bomb was nearly to the blast door now, with only about 10 seconds left to go. Keeping the bomb moving, he reached out to the Force and slid his lightsaber backward along its single line of free movement until the belt ring was pressing against the wall. The bomb reached the other end of the lightsaber's track, and Luke settled it there against one of the bars. The critical question now, he knew, was whether the explosion and resulting burst of shrapnel might damage the lightsaber. On sudden impulse, he stretched out and ignited the weapon, bringing the green blade snapping out to point directly toward the bomb. The blade should disintegrate whatever shrapnel hit it, providing at least some protection for the handle and the mechanism inside. Now there was nothing to do but wait and fight to keep from passing out in the rapidly thinning atmosphere. And with a tremendous blast of fire and thunder, 3 seconds early, the power packs blew up. Luke bit down hard as a dozen red-hot metal splinters stabbed and slashed into his left arm and side. But the results were all that he could have hoped for. Across the room, visible through the drifting smoke, the neat array of bars had been altered by the explosion. Not much, but maybe enough. Reaching out to the Force, he slid the lightsaber forward to the bomb-mangled bars and twisted the handle. Not much, but indeed enough. The lightsaber, partially freed from its confinement, could now reach to the side just enough to snick off the end of one of the nearest bars. Luke twisted again, this time sending two more bars clattering to the floor. He twisted again and again, each sweep going a little wider as he methodically carved out some space around the lightsaber. And suddenly, the weapon was free, spinning like a propeller as it cut through everything in its path. White spots were beginning to dance in front of Luke's eyes as he sent the weapon through the blast door, cutting a triangular hole that brought a welcome gush of air rushing into the partial vacuum. He took a deep breath, and as his vision cleared, he brought the lightsaber back toward him, the spinning blade mowing through the bars like a scythe through a field of tall grain. A minute later, he was back in the rocky corridors, thumbing on his comlink as he headed for the landing bay and his ship. R2! You there? The only answer was another burst of jamming static. Picking up his pace, using Jedi techniques to suppress the pain in his side and arm, he prepared himself for the pirate's next move. But that move didn't come. He emerged from the corridor into a large but deserted chamber and crossed into another corridor without seeing or sensing anyone. For that matter, he hadn't sensed anyone since his escape from their Jedi trap. Were they all hiding somewhere? Or had they all simply packed up and left? The rock floor beneath his feet shook slightly, and somewhere in the distance, he heard the faint sound of an explosion. He was through the corridor and into another room when he heard and felt a second explosion, this one noticeably closer. And abruptly, his comlink twittered. He thumbed it on. R2!
Not quite,
a familiar voice answered dryly.
Are you in trouble again, Skywalker?
Luke blinked with surprise, then smiled with the first genuine pleasure he'd felt since arriving at this place.
Of course I am, he told Mara Jade. Have you ever known me when I wasn't?
Chapter 9.
Offhand, I can't think of a time,
Mara had to admit, gazing out the Starry Ice's bridge viewport at the asteroid field stretched out in front of them.
Though I have to say that taking on a whole nest of pirates alone is beyond even your usual audacity level. What are you doing in there anyway?
Attempting to get out,
the other answered dryly.
What are you doing here?
Card asked me to check on you, she said. Seemed to think you might need a hand.
That I do,
he conceded.
Where are you?
At the moment, on the outside looking in, Mara told him, frowning.
Had that been an explosion over there on the Kavrlu's main asteroid?
Are you setting off bombs or something?
No, but somebody is. I can hear explosions in the distance. Can you see what's happening?
Seated at the next console, Captain Shearly Fawn tapped Mara's arm.
Take a look at the starboard end of the asteroid, she murmured, pointing. We've got a flotilla heading for deep space. I make it 18 ships.
Terrific,
Mara muttered.
You've got trouble, Luke. Your rats are staging a mass desertion. Fawn's got readings on 18 ships, probably more on the way. 10-1, those explosions you're hearing are the base's self-destruct system kicking in. You got any transport?
I had a Y-60 freighter when I came in with R2 and a hidden X-wing aboard, but I haven't been able to raise him.
Well, don't panic yet, Mara advised, giving the displays a quick glance. They're still jamming your primary comlink frequency. We just happen to have the equipment to sneak in on a harmonic. How far are you from your landing bay?
I don't know exactly.
Fawn snapped her fingers, pointed to one of Mara's displays.
Hold it, Mara cut in. Their jamming's just gone off. Let me release your comm link back to primary, Freak.
She looked across the bridge at the comm station.
Corvus?
Already cleared, the other reported. I'll key you back in on primary.
Abruptly, the comm speaker burst into a staccato flow of astromech droid machine language.
Slow down, R2.
Luke's voice cut in through the warbles and squeals.
I can't understand a thing you're saying.
He says he and the X-Wing are okay,
Mara told him, watching as the translation scrolled across her computer display.
They were coming for him, so he popped the X-Wing out of its hiding place.
She grimaced.
And chased them away by blasting the landing bay's atmosphere shield generators.
There was a long moment of silence.
Which I presume means the landing bay is now full of hard vacuum?
Up to its brim. I suppose it would be too much to hope there might be a vac suit locker near the bay somewhere.
I don't know, but I wouldn't want to count on it.
Me either. Fawn, you used to fly Y-60s, didn't you?
More often than I care to remember,
the other woman said.
You thinking about trying a cold shirt crossing?
It's the simplest way to get him out of there,
Mara said.
Can he do it?
I doubt it,
Fawn said.
Skywalker, is the freighter's landing ramp up or down?
Down, last I knew.
The R2 unit twittered, the droid's confirmation scrolling across the display.
It's still down,
Mara said.
In that case, not a chance,
Fawn said, shaking her head.
The Y-60's ramp mechanism is a piece of junk. Getting it sealed and repressurizing the ship would take at least 15 minutes.
I was afraid of that,
Mara said.
A little long for him to hold his breath.
What about his X-Wing?
Fawn suggested.
It can't take very long to pressurize a cockpit that size.
Except that most fighter canopies are pressure-locked these days,
Mara pointed out.
Opening them to vacuum without squeezing the manual override usually pops the ejector seat. It's a safety mechanism. I don't think the R2 can override it.
You're right, he can't,
Luke said.
I better hope I can find a vac suit.
Sure,
Mara hissed softly between her teeth, measuring the distance to the asteroid with her eyes. The chances that the pirates would have vac equipment within handy reach of potential escapees were somewhere between slim and none.
In case you can't, we're coming in.
Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Fawn turn startled eyes on her.
Jade, we don't know the safe path in,
the other woman muttered.
No, but Skywalker's astromech droid does,
Mara reminded her.
Droid, how about feeding us some numbers?
The R2 warbled acknowledgement, and a course layout appeared on the computer display.
Got it,
Mara said.
Let's go.
Fawn turned back to the helm, still obviously less than enthusiastic about risking her ship this way. There was a brief surge of acceleration, and the starry ice began moving forward.
The path doesn't look too bad,
Mara told her, studying the display.
It didn't,
the captain said, tapping her nav display.
There's just one slight problem. The asteroids aren't in the same relative positions anymore.
Mara shifted her attention to her own nav display. Fawn was right.
Blast! They've scrambled it,
she said, getting out of her chair and heading for the door.
We'll have to bantha roll our way in. I'll take number one. Get Elkin and Torv to the others.
She had reached her turbo laser station and was strapping in when Fawn signaled.
We've just tripped an automatic beacon warning us away,
the captain reported.
Ought to be hitting the first wave of trouble any time.
Understood,
Mara said, kicking the turbo laser into emergency warm-up and wishing for about the 20th time this trip that the Jade Spire wasn't stuck on Darune, getting its nav systems refitted. Card had done a good job of arming his freighters, but the fire had as much sheer laser power as the starry ice, and a lot more maneuverability on top of it. But it wasn't here, and there was nothing she could do about it. Rubbing her palms briefly on her jumpsuit to dry them, She got a firm grip on the controls and stretched out to the Force. She might not be as glorious and powerful a Jedi as the great Luke Skywalker, but she'd be willing to match her finely honed danger sense against his any day. The problem was that the danger sense wasn't particularly directional, and there were a lot of different directions out there for trouble to come from.
"Here we come, Luke," she called into her headset. "Last chance for you to wave your hand and sweep all the traps away."
The instant the words were out of her mouth, she was sorry she'd said them. Luke was too far away for her to fully touch his mind, but even so, she could sense him wincing from her remark. She opened her mouth to apologize, and suddenly, her danger sense flared, an asteroid drifting along nearby catching her full attention. She spotted a circle of unnatural smoothness on its edge, the faint glint of metal. Her turbo laser flashed, shattering the suspect asteroid into rocks and rubble. From the expanding dust cloud came a single reflexive burst of answering turbo laser fire, too little too late, and well wide of its target.
"Good shooting, Mara,"
Elkin's voice came in her ear. Mara nodded, too preoccupied with her task and her guilt over that snide remark to reply. Her guilt, and a growing annoyance at herself for feeling guilty in the first place. After all, it was Skywalker and his apprentice Jedi, not her, who were playing fast and casual with their power. If having someone pointed out bothered him, that was his problem, not hers. There was another flicker of warning, but before she could identify the source of the danger, multiple shots of red fire lanced out from Torv's turbo laser, and a string of small boulders exploded prematurely into clouds of knife-edge shrapnel bursts. Mara winced as a few stray shredders bounced off the Starry Ice's deflector shield in front of her canopy, and then the ship was past that trap and on its way to the next. Resettling her fingers on the controls, Mara again stretched out to the Force. Among the three of them, they had blasted 8 more traps by the time the Starry Ice reached the main base.
"We're here,"
Fawn's voice announced in Mara's ear.
"Skywalker, where are you?"
"I'm at my landing bay,"
Luke replied.
"R2, fire a few blasts at the rim to mark it."
The droid beeped, and a shadow between two rocky ridges flickered with laser fire.
"Okay, we've got you,"
Fawn said.
"Coming in."
The laser flashes stopped, and as they did, another of the muted explosions flickered on the asteroid's surface, uncomfortably close to the target bay.
"There goes another blast," Mara said.
"You've been missing most of the performance out there,"
Luke said.
"I've been hearing one go off every 10 seconds or so. They seem to be working their way my direction."
Another explosion flashed, this one even closer to the landing bay.
"Too close, if you ask me,"
Fawn grunted.
"You sure you want to risk putting down there, Jade?"
"Not especially, but we don't seem to have a lot of choice. You're going to owe us big for this one, Luke."
"I'll put it on your account,"
Luke promised.
"Better hurry. No, wait. Back off."
"What?"
Fawn asked.
"You heard him," Mara snapped as her own danger sense tingled. "Back off!"
The Starry Ice lurched back, and as it did so, one of the ridges framing the landing bay began crackling with sequential blasts, like an Endor Day multi-stage show rocket.
"Jade, this is crazy,"
Fawn said.
"I can't put down there. The whole area could go any time."
"She's right," Luke said.
And as Mara stretched out to the Force, she felt a subtle grimness touch his emotions.
"I guess we've only got one option left."
"Wave your hand and sweep all the traps away?"
"What's that?"
she asked aloud.
"I'll have to meet you halfway,"
he said.
"You have a docking bay that'll handle my X-Wing?"
"We've got a pair of half-ports with tractor assists,"
Fawn told him.
"They'll put an air seal around the cockpit anyway."
"Good. R2, get out there right now and dock with them."
"Wait a second,"
Mara cut him off. There was something in Skywalker's voice and thoughts that told her he was about to try something really stupid.
"You're not thinking of cold-shirting it all the way out to us, are you? We can't get in close enough for that."
"I know, I'm going to have to go into a Jedi hibernation trance as soon as I clear the blast door.
She'd called it all right. Something really stupid.
And how are you expecting to accomplish that? You'll have to go into the trance right after you've blown the door. That won't leave you any air reserve.
If I cut open the door properly, there should be a burst of air that comes out with me. That ought to give me enough to start the hibernation, as well as nudging me your direction.
You've got rotten odds.
Last-ditch options are like that. And if we take too much time discussing it, we won't have any odds at all.
Sounds like one of Solo's lines, Mara growled. But he was right. And as if to emphasize his words, the other flanking ridge began its own disintegration.
You win. Let's do it.
Right. R2, get going.
The droid gave an unhappy twitter, but the X-Wing lifted obediently out of the landing bay and headed toward the starry ice.
Fawn,
Mara called.
Tractor assist is ready at the half-port. The outer door of the starboard airlock is open, with an atmosphere barrier in place, and Crickle standing by inside with a med pack. We're ready whenever he is.
You copy that, Luke?
Yes. I'll set up the phrase, welcome aboard, to snap me out of the trance.
Welcome aboard. Right.
Okay, here we go. Don't miss me.
Mara smiled tightly. Don't miss me. Once those words would have had a totally different connotation for her. Luke Skywalker in her blaster sights. The Emperor's dying command that she kill the upstart Jedi echoing through her mind. But she'd gone through that crisis 10 years ago, inside Mount Tantus. And the Emperor's voice was now only a distant and powerless memory. Skywalker would have his own crisis to go through one of these days. Maybe he was in the middle of it right now. She hoped so. There was a flicker from Luke's emotions. Mara concentrated, visualizing the flash of his lightsaber as the green blade slashed through the thick metal of the blast door. And then, abruptly, he vanished. Fawn? Mara called, closing her eyes as she stretched out as hard as she could. But Luke's presence was no longer detectable, at least not by her. Either he'd gone into his hibernation trance, or else he was dead.
Here he comes,
Fawn said. Mara opened her eyes. He was there all right, looking like a broken puppet as he glided rapidly toward the starry ice. His limbs flailed limply as his body tumbled slowly end over end. The flickering light from the asteroid's ongoing self-destruction adding a surreal air to the whole scene. With a jolt that startled her, the starry ice began moving down toward the surface. Fawn maneuvering the ship to match Luke's trajectory. Or rather, trying to match it. Mara frowned at the approaching figure, trying to extrapolate his trajectory and impact speed. Fawn, with access to the ship's computer, got the answer first.
We've got trouble,
she said tightly.
With the speed I'm having to use to catch him, he's either going to bounce off the hull or else hit the back airlock wall hard enough to break his neck.
You just get him inside, Mara said, hitting the quick release on her restraints and scrambling to her feet. I'll make sure he lives through it.
He was almost there by the time Mara reached the airlock, cartwheeling toward them far faster than was healthy.
Computer says we're right on target,
Fawn's voice called over the speaker as Mara peered through the atmosphere barrier.
Impact in 10 seconds!
Taking a deep breath, Mara braced herself against the airlock bulkhead and stretched out to the Force. The Emperor had taught her the basics of using the Force to move objects. Rudimentary training that Skywalker himself had developed further during their trek through the Wayland Forest, and later for a brief time at that Yavin Academy of his. She'd kept up practice on her own after that, and had thought she'd become pretty proficient with the technique. But moving small objects like her lightsaber was one thing. Catching Luke as he fell toward her was something else entirely, rather like trying to stop the starry ice with her teeth. She threw everything she had into the effort, dimly aware that her whole body had gone rigid with the strain. fighting to at least slow him down before he barreled past her through the atmosphere barrier. She could sense him slowing, knew it wouldn't be enough. And at the last possible second, she stepped away from the bulkhead directly into his path. He slammed into her full tilt, the impact driving both of them back and down. "Welcome aboard!" Mara gasped, an instant before the two of them slammed together to the deck. A landing that was considerably less painful than she had expected it to be. She blinked, trying to shake the lingering stars from her vision. "Thank you," Luke murmured into her ear. The stars cleared, and Mara found herself looking up into a strange face. Luke's face, she realized, heavily disguised. He was straddling her, hands and feet on the deck, apparently having come out of his trance just in time to take his share of the impact instead of adding extra dead weight to hers.
"You're welcome," she managed.
"Nice disguise." "Thanks," he said. "It worked, too. Mostly."
"Mostly doesn't count for much, does it?" she said. "How come you didn't use a force illusion like you have before?"
"I've been trying to cut back on my use of the force, except when absolutely necessary," he explained. "It didn't seem necessary in this case."
"Ah,"
Mara said.
"That was interesting. Very interesting indeed. So, you want to get off me, or were you just getting comfortable?"
"Oh, sure," he said awkwardly, some of that old farm boy embarrassment flicking across his face as he scrambled off her. "Sorry."
"No problem,"
Mara said, getting to her feet and running a critical eye over him. Some nasty-looking shrapnel tears in his clothing, with what were probably some equally nasty injuries underneath them.
"Looks like you need to pass through the medical bay."
"No time," he said, shaking his head. "I'm okay for now, and we've got to get out of here. Did my X-Wing get docked?"
"I don't know,"
Mara said, slapping the control pad to close the outer airlock door.
"Vaughn?"
"It's been secured in B-Port. Skywalker, you know a safe route out of this death trap?"
"I used to," Luke said, keying the inner door. "It's probably not any safer than any other path now."
"We'll follow the pirates,"
Mara decided, waving Crickle away as he hurried up with his medpack and leading Luke down the corridor toward the Starry Ice's half-ports.
"They'll probably shoot at us, but you can't have everything."
"Problem? We seem to have run out of pirates to follow. Nothing's left the asteroid in nearly 2 minutes."
Mara felt her stomach muscles tighten.
"Which means the grand finale of their self-destruct system is probably ticking down right now."
"Probably. What do we do? Pick a direction and go?"
"More or less," Mara told her. "Start pulling away from the main base, but not too fast. I want to be on my turbo laser before we get into anything nasty."
"Give me time to get out there, too," Luke added. "I can run ahead of you and trigger the traps."
"Only if you can see them coming,"
Mara pointed out, giving him a hard look.
"I've got a better danger sense than you do. Maybe I should take your ship and break trail."
"I can do it," he said firmly. "Anyway, it's my responsibility. You're here because of me." He had a point.
"If that's how you want it,"
Mara said, pointing down the corridor.
"Take the first left, then break right. Make it fast."
She needn't have worried. By the time she reached her turbo laser station, the X-Wing was already burning space ahead of them.
"I'm ready," she announced as she strapped in again. "Get going, Luke. Good luck."
"May the Force be with you,"
he said, with what she decided was probably mild reproof.
"Stay sharp."
The trip in through the asteroids had been nerve-wracking. The trip out, to Mara's surprise, was almost casually easy. Time and again, the X-Wing would shift course slightly and fire, setting off a distant cluster trap or shredder bomb or automatic turbo laser nest, usually before Mara's own danger sense had even triggered. It quickly settled into a pattern. The X-Wing would maneuver, fire, and dodge,
with the starry ice following stolidly behind, its own turbolaser crew needing to do only occasional cleanup work. Whether by design or accident, Luke seemed to be running slightly above the freighter, doing his most thorough job of minesweeping within Mara's angle of fire.
Most of the cleanup work